All right, so we will take a moment to bring our minds to rest before we recite our prayers. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru, four continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms, according to the different propensities of beings. Please turn the wheel of Dharma, great lesser and uncommon. And now my teacher prayers, beginning with the four Dharmas of Gampopa. Dadan sam chantam che lo che su dror zin ji lap du sol che lam du dror zin ji lap du sol am trupa sower zin ji lap du sol trupa yeshi su charo zin ji lap du sol. I pray for blessing. May my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing. May the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing. May the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing. May confusion arise as wisdom. Lai ke dang lu dan nu jin ke chun da da mi ke nam dang dro a kun ji dra ki ji tsam par tam che ke du da ki ji tan to. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas gods, those of humans and of demons too, in the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. And if you have the reminder for arousing bodhicitta, we can recite that together. And otherwise, we can just make the aspirations mentally. Let us begin by giving rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. And so that is where we are in the Ornament of Precious Liberation on the path from here to Buddhahood. We've just completed an explanation of both aspiration bodhicitta, which is the first sentence of what we just recited, and action bodhicitta, which is the second sentence. So we actually will do this. We not only aspire to attain awakening in order to bring all beings to enlightenment, but we will do it. It's a commitment to do it. And so today, we cut to the chase. It's the actual how-to within the how-to. So that's the six paramitas. And we will get to that as soon as we have done our meditation. So let's bring our minds to rest even more. Just letting everything settle, including awareness of our body and our field of awareness. All senses open, all systems go. So I've somehow misplaced my my sheet with the guided meditation on it. So we're winging it today. We're winging the two wings. Starting with the four thoughts. So that's our basis, the four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma. And that is what the first line of Gampopa's four dharmas is about, is let us all turn the mind to the Dharma. And we do that traditionally through remembering the four thoughts or the four reminders. First, appreciating, like fully appreciating, vividly appreciating in a heartfelt way what an amazing opportunity we have. All our faculties intact, all our basic needs met, and we have the Dharma in front of us. And so all we have to do is put it into practice. And then the second reminder reminds us that it's a limited time opportunity, as I tend to say, that if we waste our time, we'll lose it. So it's not about putting the Dharma into practice in the future. It's about now in this moment, turning our mind toward the Dharma and acting on our aspirations. And then third, just a reinforcement that it's our actions that count. Like it's what we actually do that counts. If we waste our time, that creates a certain kind of future for us. If we engage in harmful actions, that creates another kind of future. If we engage in helpful actions, that creates a more positive future. And if we engage in practice, that creates liberation from all of it for us and creates a real basis for helping others do the same. So we need to be mindful of all of our actions, in particular, as the verse states, avoid harmful actions, engage as much as possible in helpful actions or positive actions, and always monitor our stream of being, always know what our mind is up to so that it doesn't create negative karma for us when we're not paying attention. And then the final reminder of the four reminders is just lighting that fire under us that we really need to liberate ourselves, because as the Buddha taught, all of samsara is suffering, even the things that feel good, even the things that make us temporarily happy. It's all suffering in the end. And while we can enjoy the good things, we also need to attend to what will liberate us from all of it. And so here we are implementing those very instructions, acting on those very reminders. Again, bringing our mind to rest on this sheet and in the Great Path of Awakening and the Seven Points of Mind Training, the next instruction is to follow the breath for a bit. So we'll just follow the breath. And the breath is good to use here because we're going to use it again when we get to taking and sending. So just settling into noticing the breath coming and going. Keeping the rest of our awareness quite open and relaxed, but not losing track of the breath. Or if we do lose track, just coming back to it. So in the last 2 weeks, Lama Jinzong has shared with us wonderful instructions from Lama Norla Rinpoche about ultimate bodhicitta. And hopefully that has enriched our ability to connect with it. And so that's what we're going to do now. Same instructions he was explaining in those instructions. And if you want to review them at any time or you haven't heard them, they're in the audio for Lama Jinzong's teachings on bodhicitta. Both sessions. So first we just relax our grip on what we perceive as reality and just let it perceive it as if it were a dream. All experience is a dream. And that's what we are relating to through our senses externally and also our thoughts, opinions, what we think of as our knowledge, our certainties. We let it all fade a little bit into the dream realm. And once we've let go of that perception of everything as solid, which we reflexively wake up to each moment of our existence. We then turn that awareness to look at itself, looking at our own mind, our own awareness, which is unborn, meaning it doesn't start anywhere. You can't find a beginning for it. And we can ask a question or two just to bring our awareness into sync with itself. Does this awareness have a color, a shape, a location, and so forth? Just asking the question, looking and resting. Resting in whatever we found when we asked the question and we looked at the mind itself. And then the third slogan of ultimate bodhicitta is to let even the remedy release naturally, meaning we went through the process of bringing our attention to it by asking questions and seeing that we couldn't find anything, and we let go of even that level of conceptuality, which brings us naturally into resting in the essence, the basis of everything, which is the nature of mind itself. Not worrying about what that might mean conceptually, but simply letting go of all concepts and letting our mind naturally come to rest. And as concepts arise, as our attention fixates on certain things that are arising in our experience internally or externally, we just recognize that and let it go again and come back to rest in the essence of everything. We can do this again and again. And so while maintaining this recognition, this awareness of the mind itself, resting in its own essence, whatever that may mean to us, without losing track of that, we can then add taking and sending in order to bring in relative bodhicitta, the cultivation of love and compassion, which is equally as important as the cultivation of wisdom, seeing things clearly the way they are. So while continuing to see things clearly the way they are, in an alert, relaxed state of mind, completely non-judgmental, completely confident, we can bring to mind someone that we naturally feel compassion for, a loved one, human, animal, feel the wish in our heart that they not suffer, that we want them to be free from whatever kind of suffering they may have, and still in touch with the essence of our own mind and of our experience, still in touch with that, we begin to breathe in the suffering of this person, this animal, this group of beings, freeing them from it, breathing it in through our nostrils, and if we like, through all the pores in our body, letting it dissolve in our heart center, in our Buddha nature, which is vast and limitless. Breathing out happiness, peace, healing, whatever that person needs. And doing this for a few rounds, either with every set of inhalations and exhalations, or every few, whatever's comfortable. Breathing in the suffering, letting it dissolve, seeing them as freed from it, and sending them back happiness, healing, peace, and so forth. If it's helpful, we can visualize the suffering as dark light and the happiness as white refreshing light or rainbow colored refreshing light. As much as we can, keeping this in focus so we don't lose track of what we're doing. And now adding to that visualization, someone we don't have particular feelings about, whoever's walking outside where we are right now that we don't see, someone we encounter casually on a daily basis, feeling the same heartfelt wish for them to be free of suffering. And then putting that into practice by breathing their suffering in, letting it dissolve, and breathing out whatever they need. And now, if it's reasonably comfortable, bringing into the picture someone we don't get along with, someone we have negative feelings for, someone we may feel has harmed us, you can skip this part if it's too difficult. But if you can, we'll add them to the panorama in front of us and breathe in their suffering as well, with the heartfelt wish that they be free of it. And breathing out to them the same happiness, healing, and peace that we breathed out to those we loved. And now extending our visualization and our aspiration to all sentient beings. May they all be happy and free from suffering. And may our practice bring this about. And now thinking that through our practice, all beings are, including ourselves, are completely freed from suffering, completely filled with happiness, and completely awakened. Resting in how that would feel for a moment. And now letting go of all concepts, all visualization, coming back basically to step four of ultimate bodhicitta and resting in awareness, and in particular, awareness of the mind itself. And now coming back to study and contemplation mode at your own speed, stretch a little, have some water. And I'll unmute, I won't unmute everybody, but if anybody has any questions or comments before we start on the introduction to the six paramitas, anything from before, anything in general, please feel free. So we'll be working mainly from Ringu Tulku today to, we'll bring in a couple of points from Ornament of Precious Liberation that Ringu Tulku doesn't address. This is a very short chapter. Very short and pithy chapter, entering into one of my very favorite parts of Ornament of Precious Liberation / Path to Buddhahood, which is, as I said, cutting to the chase. So we've laid all the groundwork. The groundwork is laid. We are halfway through the book, almost exactly halfway. We have covered the three prerequisites. First of all, we've covered in the introduction why we need to do this. Why do we need to follow the path? Because it's not going to, samsara will not liberate itself, is what Gampopa said. If we don't do the work ourselves, we will never be liberated and we'll always be stuck in the vicious circle of samsara. So that's why we need to do it. And then we need to gather three things in order to effectively travel the path. We need the cause, which is Buddha nature. All got that. We can check it off. We need the basis of precious human life. If we're here, we have that. And then we need the authentic teacher. We all have a connection with an authentic teacher. So we can check off all the prerequisites. And then we need to deal with the four obstacles to awakening, the four things that get in the way of traveling the path, and those are being too busy, which is, if we contemplate impermanence, it will dissolve or help us with that obstacle. Second obstacle is being too attached to pleasures and distractions. And if we contemplate the suffering of samsara and karma, the law of karma, that will free us from the second obstacle. Third obstacle is being too focused on our own liberation, our own path, and not including others. And so love and compassion, cultivating love and compassion, knocks that one out of the way. And we're now well into the antidote to the fourth obstacle. The rest of the book, except for the last two chapters, is that antidote. It's how to do it. The obstacle is not knowing how to do it. We know how to do it now. And so these first couple of chapters on refuge and bodhicitta have laid the groundwork. You know, again, we've gathered more that we need. We need refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha to effectively travel the path. That's our example. So we know what we're doing. The Dharma is our path, so we know what to do. And then the Sangha is our support. And then we need the bodhicitta of aspiration. We need to really generate the wish to attain enlightenment in order to free all beings from suffering and for them to all attain enlightenment. And now we are up to, and so the bodhicitta of commitment began with the explanation of the bodhisattva vow, how to take it, how to keep it. And that can be reviewed anytime. So now, after all of this, we're at the action part. What we actually have to do, like in terms of our day-to-day actions, and that is the six paramitas. So we are going to turn to Ringu Tulku. Let's take out that bookmark. Page 80, instructions for developing the bodhicitta of commitment, the six paramitas. Okay. So I'm just going to read from Ringu Tulku. And if you have any questions anytime or any comments, feel free to get my attention. I'll also allow some, you know, particular times for that. We come now to the precepts of the bodhicitta of commitment. Like, what do we actually have to do to implement the bodhicitta of commitment? Or action bodhicitta. What do we actually do? We can summarize all the bodhisattva practices in three words, and this is right out of Gampopa. Three things. Morality is the first branch of action bodhicitta, morality or ethical conduct. Meditation is the second branch, and wisdom is the third branch. And we're going to see that all of the paramitas fit in, each of the paramitas fits into one of these categories, if not all of them. So Ringu Tulku says, these three trainings are none other than the six paramitas, which can be considered the bodhisattva's precepts, how they should try to act and live. Literally, paramita means to go beyond or to transcend. It means literally to go to the other shore. Like we're stuck on the shore of samsara. We want to go to the shore of freedom. So paramita is what carries us to the other shore. Practicing the six paramitas allows us to overcome our mental poisons, to transcend all concepts, and to see the true nature of things. They are the methods through which we can reach enlightenment. So I wanted to actually just look at Ornament of Precious Liberation for a moment on page 151. He lists his usual, well, first of all, he lists, which Rinku Thakura doesn't quite officially list all the six paramitas. I mean, he addresses them all in the next paragraph. But does everybody know? I mean, we've been around the Dharma for all. Does everybody know offhand what the six paramitas are? And if you don't, that's a really good thing to put in your toolbox, like that you could just reel them off. And so we'll take a moment and see if we can dredge them up. I know some people can, maybe everybody. So first one is generosity. Second one is ethical conduct. Third one is patience. Fourth one is diligence or joyful perseverance. Fifth one is meditation. And sixth one is wisdom. Did I leave any out? Okay, good. Good. So on page 151, Gampopa has the list. Training at the bottom of the page, training an engaged bodhicitta can be summarized as sixfold. Generosity, moral discipline, forbearance. Ken translates the word that we translate as patience. He calls it forbearance. I think it's a fine translation. I just prefer patience. Diligence, next one. Meditative concentration and wisdom. So we're going to get an instruction. I'm going to get an overview today of how those fit together, because they fit together in some very interesting ways. It's not just like six separate things. It's like a sequence, and it's like a little puzzle that they all fit together in certain ways. That's actually quite useful to have some awareness of. Okay, and then on page 152, and then I will leave Gampopa for the most of the class. But he has his list of topics, and I think there's just a blessing in reading the topics from Gampopa. So, and Rinku Thakura doesn't address all of the topics, so that's what we're going to do at the end, is just bring in the topics that he doesn't specifically talk about. So the six perfections are summarized through six topics. That's in bold print in the middle of the page. Their definite number, we know the answer to that one. Their definite order, which is one of the interesting points. Their essential characteristics, their etymology, which he just touched upon. It means taking you to the other shore. Subdivisions and groupings. All right, and with that, we will come back to Rinku Thakura. We're on page 81. He says, the first four paramitas, and so here's where he's going to start matching up the paramitas with that list on page 80, morality, meditation, and wisdom being the three branches of action bodhicitta. So the first four paramitas, generosity, right conduct or ethical conduct, forbearance or patience, and diligence, relate to right living. That's like morality. I think right living is what, you know, that's the same as morality. The fifth paramita is none other than meditation, which is the second category on page 80. And then the sixth is wisdom, which is the third. So the first four paramitas fit into, he fits all the first four into morality. And the fifth one is meditation, and the third one is wisdom, true to their names in the list of six paramitas. So the practice of the first, the six paramitas are at the heart of all the actions of a bodhisattva, of someone who is training to truly work for others. Anybody have any questions or comments at this point? Okay. And Lama Jinzang, please feel free to, you know, add anything anytime that you would like to. I know you're in the midst of craziness at KTC today. So the practice of the first three paramitas, so here's one of the ways that they sort of divide up. The practice of the first three paramitas ensures for us a happy life in samsara. So that's generosity, ethical conduct, and patience. Through those, we improve our life in samsara. We improve our life in this lifetime. And we, Gampopa says that those are the ones that get us a higher rebirth, a rebirth in one of the three higher realms, human or one of the gods realms. So the first three are for that. We could say that if we remain in samsara anyway, we might as well be rich rather than poor. And only generosity, the cultivation of the art of giving, can bring us that kind of prosperity. Following the same logic, it's better to be in good health than to be sick, which implies respect for moral conduct, since it is said that those who have an ethical lifestyle will enjoy good health. In the same way, if we want to live in an agreeable environment and have good relations with those around us, we must develop patience. So when Gampopa explains these same points, and so what he's saying here is that the first paramita, generosity, is said to promote prosperity for us. The second paramita, ethical conduct, is said to lead to good health. And then the third one, patience, is said to help you have a good environment, to be in a good environment. And we saw in the karma chapter that the environment that you're born into is part of the karma of certain negative actions. So this is the way to ensure a good environment in our next life and improve our environment in this lifetime. The three paramitas that follow help us, on the other hand, to escape from samsara. So the first three paramitas, on the face of them at least, are about three higher realms, better samsaric life, but they're not, on their own, they're not going to liberate us from samsara. The last three, diligence, meditation, and wisdom, are the path to liberation. And we'll see when we get to wisdom that you can apply wisdom to all of them and turn all of them magically into the path to liberation. But just at the sort of basic level, the first three, better samsaric life, second three, path of liberation. Diligence is necessary to develop all the qualities that are within us. Meditation is also an indispensable tool, and meditation leads us to wisdom, which is the sixth paramita. If we train in the six paramitas, all of them, we will have not only prosperity in this life, but also all the necessary conditions to liberate ourselves from the sufferings of samsara. So now here we come to another aspect of the six paramitas that I find very interesting. Rinpoche Tulku invites us to notice that the six paramitas are presented in the logical order of our progression on the path of the bodhisattva. We begin with the practice of giving, which allows us to become less self-centered and less envious. So so generosity requires you to focus on the other person's benefit. So that's how it makes us less self-centered and less jealous. We're focused on wishing benefit for the other person. That's why we're being generous, because when we get to the chapter on generosity, the next chapter, we'll see that part of generosity is that you have to give something that you attach value to. Like if you give something you didn't want anyway, then it's not really generosity. It's not true generosity. So you have to give something that is, you know, at least at the beginning, maybe a little hard to give. And that's how we sort of shock ourselves out of our reflexive, you know, whatever reflexive self-centeredness or ego clinging that we have. So we begin with generosity, with giving. And as soon as we are less possessive towards things as well as toward people, it is easier to adopt a moral or ethical way of life, since the basis of right conduct is non-attachment. So through generosity, we cultivate being less attached to things. And through being less attached to things, it's easier to live a life of positive actions and not negative actions, because negative actions always come from looking to our own benefit. And positive actions always come from looking to the benefit of others. So generosity makes it easier to live an ethical life. In the same way, ethical conduct is the foundation of forbearance or patience. Indeed, forbearance and tolerance develop from self-discipline. So an ethical life is a disciplined life. You know, you're always keeping in mind your goals, and you're sticking with your goals. You're not allowing yourself to be sloppy and, you know, and devolve into unethical behavior or self-centered behavior. And so if you're not again, we're chipping away at the ego clinging here. And the less ego clinging you have, the more patience you can have. You know, your buttons may still get pushed, but it's not as big a deal. And when it's not as big a deal, it's easy to be patient. So, and then once one is patient, to continue the sequence here, once one is patient, it is easy to develop diligence, because diligence is none other than the capacity to apply oneself intelligently, to uphold one's interest in everything one does, including one's spiritual practice. Meditation then presents no further problems, since diligence has taught us concentration. So if we have the non-attachment of generosity, the further non-attachment of ethical conduct, and the discipline of ethical conduct, then patience develops those qualities further, and then we become diligent, because we're not so focused on our own immediate gratification. So we can apply ourselves to what will actually help us. And so through that, meditation naturally arises. If we have diligence, then we can put our practice into practice. We're not always being called upon, you know, at the beck and call of our momentary desires and so forth. You can actually have the discipline and the patience to sit and do your practice. As for meditation, it makes our mind calm and stable and protects it from distraction and confusion. So where's that leading? If we're becoming less confused and less distracted, and our mind is becoming more calm and stable, the next step is wisdom, the sixth paramita. So it is on this ground that wisdom progressively manifests. Indeed, a mind that is perfectly calm and clear sees without difficulty the true nature of phenomena. That's actually a very profound statement, and it speaks to the sequence of meditation on the Mahamudra path, that you have to learn to bring your mind to rest. And once your mind is at rest, then it becomes easy to develop insight into the nature of mind. So we could therefore compare the six paramitas to a staircase to enlightenment. Just like steps, each paramita is a support for the next. That is why we are advised, for the sake of ease and speed, to practice them in the right order. So I have a note here. Right, so this was Gumpopa's second point. The first point was definite number, six. Definitely six paramitas, that's five right there. So my thumb is counting twice. And so his second one was definite order. And what he said was the order in which they develop in the mental continuum of a person. So that's what Rinku Tulku just explained. You just start with generosity and it will lead naturally to the other six, step by step. So that's the definite order. Also Gampopa said, and Rinku Tulku doesn't specifically address it here, but he said, it's also a progression from the easiest one to practice to the most challenging, most difficult. Sort of, he said, the coarsest or grossest one to the most subtle one. So coarsest or grossest, easiest to practice, that's generosity. And then it progressively becomes more subtle and more challenging until you get to wisdom, which, as we know, those of us who have been through this text before and had other teachings on the cultivation of wisdom, it's very subtle. So to read the last sentence from Rinku Tulku again, that is why we are advised, for the sake of ease and speed, to practice them in the right order. So it's not that we practice generosity and perfect generosity, and then we go on to ethical conduct and perfect ethical conduct, but we start with generosity. And once we sort of have a feel for generosity and we don't, it's not so much of a struggle anymore, then we can really sink our teeth into ethical conduct, so to speak. So we'll practice all of them simultaneously, but again, we'll focus probably on the order, focusing most on generosity until we have a grip on it, and then focusing more on ethical conduct and so forth. So I do want to look at Gampopa again. Does anybody have any questions or comments at this point? Yes, Angela, I will unmute you. I just got to move all my stuff. Okay, you're unmuted.
I've been studying the 21 Tyras, and then like we've always studied the 6 Paramitas, and then they sort of threw me for a loop, and they said that one, you know, has the 10 Paramitas. I mean, are those ever discussed or different?
They will be actually. I'm sorry, I don't know what you're trying to tell me, Jinzong. Jinzong, I'm not able to unmute you. You were unmuted for a second and then you read. Okay, now you're
I'm
good.
I'm saying that I didn't quite hear the end of Angela's question because it was sort of soft. Would you mind repeating your question? I'm sorry.
Like I've been studying the 21 Tyras, and within one of the 21 Tyras, she has like the nectar, and it has the 10 Paramitas. So I don't know. And there's the 6 Paramitas, and then there's the 10. So are they also to be, I'm not even sure about how to go about practicing the rest of them. So not that I need to study those, but is that ever discussed altogether?
It'll be discussed later in this book. For now, like our working paramitas are the 6 paramitas. We'll see, when we get to the third from the end chapter, I'm forgetting how many chapters are in it, but the chapter on the stages and the pads and the levels, like there's a whole chapter that we're going to get through the whole book, like through all of the, like all the steps of to enlightenment. And then he's going to give us a chapter that's an overview, like a bird's eye view, and explain the 5 stages of the path and the 10 bodhisattva levels. And we're going to see that for the purpose of the 10 bodhisattva levels, there's a paramita attached to each one. So at each bodhisattva level, you're refining a paramita, and it's at that point that it becomes 10. Yeah, I mean, when we finish with this, we may have some time left at the end, and I can do a quick look and see what the other 4 paramitas are, because I'm not bringing them to mind at the moment.
I have them right here.
Oh, well, reel them off.
Okay. Let me see. I got to get that book.
We can all have a little break to remind ourselves of ultimate bodhicitta and relative bodhicitta.
Okay, so it was the 3rd Tara.
And what's the text that you're reading this in, that you're finding these in?
Smile of the Sun and Moon.
And who's that by?
The 21 Tara.
Oh, 21 Tara's right.
Yeah, Paladin Shirab Rinpoche.
Okay. Okay. Well, the ten paramitas are definitely a thing that we will encounter. So it's good to know like what the difference is. It's a good point to bring up.
So she was the 4th one. Okay, the 10 paramitas said generosity, conduct, patience, effort, concentration, knowledge, skillful means, power, aspiration, and wisdom.
Right. So the 10 are the first 6 as we know them. And then we've added on skillful means, power or strength, aspiration, and wisdom. And those will be explained as paramitas when we get to chapter 19. So there'll be a little bit more on those there, like what the specific meaning of the other ones is. But where the last 4 are perfected are the highest 4 bodhisattva levels. So it's the 6 paramitas that will take us there. So that's all we need to worry about right now. But they will be explained. Thank you for asking that, because that's something that one runs across in various places. And it's like, what are the 10 paramitas? I thought it was 6 paramitas. So thank you, Angela. Anything further on that? Okay, anybody else? Mama Jinzong, you got anything? You don't have to, just
unmute. That it seemed that in that text it said that the 6 is knowledge, they differentiate, and then the 10th they said was wisdom. So who knows? We'll see when we get there.
No, we do know. I mean, we do know what that means, because the 6th paramita here is Sherab, which is the acquired kind of wisdom. It's often translated as wisdom, and KTC tends to translate as wisdom. But some translators translate it as knowledge. Like they might let's call it transcendent knowledge or superior knowledge, to distinguish it from worldly knowledge. And we're going to get all into that when we get to that chapter of the book, to the sixth paramita. So the sixth paramita is wisdom share up, the acquired kind of wisdom. And the 10th paramita is yeshe, our innate wisdom, our Buddha nature. So thanks for that clarification, Lama Jinzong. Anybody else? This is all good. Happy to hear from anybody. Bringing out points I might not think of. All right, there'll be more time for discussion because we don't have a lot left of the text. Let me see if I had anything else here. All right, so we're going into Ornament of Precious Liberation now to just wrap it up because the last 4 points. So back on page 152, six topics, the definite number, the definite order. Those are the ones that have been specifically addressed. And he also, Rinku Thukla also talked about the etymology. We're going to look at those in Gampopa now. And that's page 153 of Ornament of Precious Liberation. So the third point concerns the four essential characteristics of Bodhisattva generosity and the other perfections. So there's four essential characteristics of each paramita. One is that they diminish the strength of the unfavorable forces. So we become less vulnerable to negative forces in our lives. Negative emotions, negative external forces, whatever they are, they sort of strengthen us against those. Second one, they enable the arising of pristine awareness. And pristine awareness here looks to be a translation of yeshe, means Buddha nature, means innate wisdom. They allow for that to start to manifest itself. So remember, this is through each of these paramitas: generosity, ethical conduct, patience, diligence, and so forth. It's all having these four effects, making us less vulnerable to anything unfavorable, helping us connect with our innate wisdom, utterly free of concepts. That's the nature of that kind of wisdom. Cherub is not free of concepts. Cherub is conceptual wisdom. And that would be another way to say what the difference is. Cherub, or the first kind of wisdom or knowledge, is conceptual. And it's leading us to non-conceptual wisdom. So each of the paramitas helps that process to happen. Third, they bring perfect accomplishment of aspirations. So whatever our aspirations are, whether we're chanting formal aspiration prayers or just informally making an aspiration to become enlightened in order to help other beings, or to be able to help other beings in any way that we can, or may no beings ever experience sickness again, whatever our aspirations are, each of the paramitas helps us to realize it. And then fourth, they bring sentient beings to their full maturity in three ways, meaning through three vehicles. So the Theravada vehicle, the Mahayana vehicle, the Vajrayana vehicle. Through all of those vehicles, it's helping beings mature, which means to mature towards realization of their true nature through to Buddhahood, to mature to Buddhahood. In Shantideva, for example, unenlightened beings are referred to as the childish. So they're unmatured. You could say that just as easily. Immature beings act this way and that way. But as a bodhisattva, we're going to act this way and this other way. That's a thread throughout Shantideva. So it's good to keep in mind, just you don't have to know the specifics of what the four essential characteristics are necessarily, but just know that practicing each of these paramitas, from generosity all the way up to wisdom, helps us attain all of our goals as Dharma practitioners. So that's the third point of Gampopa's 6 points. The fourth point is the etymology, and we covered that in Rinku Thukla. And I'm not going to read that because I actually don't understand how some of it works, the specifics that since it clears away suffering, it is generosity. Since it is the attainment of coolness, it is moral discipline. The word for discipline in Sanskrit means coolness, shila. Anyway, but to go to the bottom of the page, since each of the paramitas, all of them transport one from samsara to the far shore, namely to nirvana, They are referred to as what lead to the far shore, and that's the literal meaning of paramita. So page 154, the fifth point concerns the six subdivisions of, within each of the perfections, the generosity of generosity, the moral discipline of generosity, and so forth, giving rise to 36 subdivisions. This is purely academic, but I think it's interesting. So what he's saying here is that each paramita incorporates all six paramitas for a total of 36 sort of levels of paramita done. There's a, you know, there's a generosity of generosity, but generosity also includes moral discipline. It also includes patience. It also includes discipline and so forth. And he does not explain it further. It's just a categorization here. And then the last point, the sixth point, examines their groupings. And this is interesting. And Ringu Tulku, I don't think Ringu Tulku actually says this, but this is the most common explanation of how the six paramitas are sort of divided up. So Gampopa says they fall into two groups based on the two accumulations. What are the two accumulations? Everybody know that? That's a thing that we should also have at the tip of our tongue all the time. The two accumulations are merit and wisdom. So generosity and moral discipline, the first two paramitas, belong to the accumulation of merit. Wisdom belongs to the accumulation of wisdom, pristine. So wisdom meaning knowledge, meaning sherab, meaning conceptual wisdom, contributes to or belongs to the accumulation of actual wisdom, innate wisdom. And then for patience, diligence, and meditative concentration belong to both. So patience, diligence, and meditative concentration, meaning meditative concentration really means shamatha, shine meditation. It means being able to bring the mind to rest where you want it to be and keep it there for as long as you want it to be there. That's what meditative concentration is. It's learning to focus your attention, how you want to focus it. So those three. So the real accumulation of merit is through generosity and ethics. And we'll see how that works. Like that might not be completely intuitive, like how that would work with moral discipline. How does that accumulate merit? But you'll see when we get to that chapter, it becomes very clear. So generosity and moral discipline belong to the accumulation of merit. Wisdom belongs to the accumulation of wisdom. And I think I misspoke. I don't think it's talking about innate wisdom there. I think it's just the sixth paramita is conceptual wisdom. It is sherab. So that is its own category. And then the three in-between ones, forbearance or patience, diligence, and meditative concentration help us with both. Like they are all qualities, and you can see that they're all qualities that help us accumulate wisdom and help us accumulate merit. So this is all, a lot of this chapter really is academic. You know, it's not practice oriented, but it's helping, it's the view, it's helping us understand what the function of the paramitas is and why we want to practice them as they are explained in the next six chapters. The other way though, that it's sometimes explained, I think it was explained this way in the 37 practices, often the first five paramitas are considered, well, okay, we're talking about, he's talking here about merit and wisdom, and I'm not sure merit and method are always 100% the same, but often it's said that the first five paramitas are method and the sixth paramita is wisdom. And that's another, you know, delineation that we have in the Dharma. So that's all of Ringu Tulku and of Gampopa. And Gampopa says, this concludes the presentation of the six perfections, the 11th chapter of the Ornament of Precious Liberation, a wish-fulfilling gem of sublime Dharma. So we have lots of time left. Lama Jinzong has something to contribute.
Actually, you didn't do the very last paragraph in Ringu Tulku in 82.
You're right. Thank you. You're right. I didn't mean to do that. So we're not done yet. We're going to go back to page 82 in Ringu Tulku. And wrap up Ringu Tulku's explanation. There's a difference between the qualities termed ordinary and those termed transcendent. And this is a very, very important point. Take the example of giving. Generosity is always positive, but it only becomes a paramita, only becomes transcendent when it is accompanied by the wisdom that perceives the insubstantial nature of the giver, what is given, and the receiver. We're going to talk about this, but I'll finish reading it first. The transcendence of the act, and the transcendence is what makes it a paramita. It's what, it's actually the transcendent aspect that takes us to the other shore. The transcendence of the act of giving implies that the giver is attached neither to his or her image. I did the thing, this wonderful thing. I was a good person. I gave something to someone, nor to the recipient. Oh, I really helped that person, that specific person, nor to what is given. If we give without attachment, we expect nothing in return. Generosity then becomes the paramita of giving. When we are no longer personally and emotionally involved in what we are doing, the mental poisons no longer taint our actions, which then become paramitas. So the first five paramitas are said to be method. And if you only do the first five, if you just perfect the first five paramitas, if you only perfect generosity, ethical conduct, and so forth, that makes you a very good person. But you're still in samsara. It makes you a very good person within samsara. And you can do a lot of good with generosity, even if you don't have the wisdom aspect. Really good to practice them all. But what makes them paramitas, which means actions that actually liberate us, as opposed to either making our lives better or being able to help other people, you know, in sort of material ways in samsara. What makes it a liberating action is understanding the emptiness of it. So he didn't use the word emptiness here, but that's what he's talking about. That you can't really pinpoint in an act of generosity, or it's not helpful to us to look at it that way, that I gave this to that person and it really helped them, and I gave this valuable thing that I really was attached to. It really, all of those kind of markers exist only in relative reality, which we've talked about before, as, you know, nothing is really the way it seems in relative reality. We still have to navigate it, but it's not the way it really seems. And wisdom is seeing it the way it really is. It's seeing through how it seems to how it is. And how it is that there, if you remember, like, basic ignorance is seeing ourself as separate from others and seeing everything as separate from everything else, when it's really completely interdependent. And in the end, it's selfless. Like, there's no solid separate self of anything. And so what wisdom means is seeing that, like, in the act of generosity, there's no solid separate self giving something to another solid separate self and giving a solid separate thing. This is very closely related to the first ultimate bodhicitta instruction, to see all our experience as like a dream. Nothing really, it's like an illusion that it's happening the way we perceive it to be happening. And if you woke up, you would see it's not like that. So the wisdom aspect is to know that. And we'll only know it conceptually at the beginning, but it helps to know it conceptually. And then through the practice of all the paramitas, and especially five and six, all of our paramitas become gradually imbued with that wisdom aspect of understanding the emptiness of everything that we're seeing, that dreamlike nature of everything that we're actually seeing or engaging in. So I hope that that helped clarify and did not make things more confusing, but we're open to questions and discussion now in Lama Jinzong. And again, if you have anything to add, please do. Yes, I'm muting you. Somehow you're muting yourself again. Somehow you're becoming muted again. You're unmuted now.
Okay. So this is, it strikes me that this is where that aspect of confusing relative and ultimate comes in, because, you know, people always say, well, if nothing exists, then why bother, you know, or why accumulate positive karma? Why do anything good? Because ultimately nothing. And this is just the point where we all have to be, you know, really careful to recognize that even at the point of, you know, at least relatively recognize, you know, conceptually it's contrived, but that there's no ultimate being who's giving or whatever, though relatively we do it to develop again, the accumulation of merit, which will help us to cut through that ego clinging. And I would imagine that the whole point is that when you attain enlightenment, because you've made all those aspirations to benefit others, and upon enlightenment, there's no longer like a sense of I'm doing this for others, but naturally the fruition of all those aspirations then is that you're benefiting others. So it's again, no longer having like, it's not like I'm going to make a choice. Do I help them or not? So I just find that important to point out.
Yeah. Yeah. Wisdom just takes the conceptuality out of the whole thing, but we need the conceptuality at the relative level. We do have to engage in actual generosity by giving something to someone and so forth, being patient with someone. But so the background, it's just like the three kayas, which we encountered in the refuge section. You know, all of these levels are operative at the same time. The Dharmakaya, where it's pure potential and nothing is actually manifest. The Sambhogakaya, where it's manifest on a certain level, kind of like the dream level, and then the full manifestation, full physical manifestation of things, the Nirmanakaya. It all, like everything unfolds in that same way, you know, at the level of emptiness, at the level of clarity, at the level of full manifestation. Thank you, Lama Jinzong. Anybody have any questions or comments? Is everybody feeling like this was a worthwhile class and they got something out of it, or was this just sort of an academic exercise? Oh, we get a thumbs up from Lama Jinzong, but she's already there. She understands this stuff. Okay, anybody have any comments, any feedback? Do you feel, did it inspire you want to practice the six? Oh, Mark Hoyer has his hand up. You're unmuted, Mark.
Yeah, I went to a teaching not very long ago with an old Drikun Kagyu Lama, mm-hmm. friend of mine, and he said something pretty interesting that I'd never heard before about the paramitas, which is we've always heard that wisdom and compassion are the two wings, right?
Right.
Wisdom and compassion.
Right.
To you know, kind of fly the Dharma path.
Yeah.
And he said that one way to look at it is that the first three paramitas are one wing, and then the last two paramitas are another wing, and diligence is the body.
He says
the diligence is, you know, the one that's beating the wings.
Right.
And you have to keep on.
Yeah, that's good. You know, I read mostly from Ringu Tulku, but I think somewhere in Gampopa, he does divide them up that way, with diligence as the one that's common to both of the wings. He doesn't say it the way that your teacher said it, which is very elegant and nice way to say it. But he did say diligence is kind of the one that goes with everything else. Whereas in the part we read, in another section that we read, it divided them up differently, with the first two being accumulation of merit, the last one being accumulation of wisdom, and then the three in the middle going with both of them. But diligence also goes with everything else, where you can divide it up into two groups, with diligence the one that's not in a particular group. So I think Gampopa basically says the same thing, but we didn't read that specifically from Gampopa. So thanks for sharing that, Mark.
So so what we're really doing is we're doing sort of like Heart Sutra with getting to the other shore, right? It's from what you just said about it doesn't become a real paramita, doesn't help us get to the other shore.
Right.
We see the kind of the insubstantiality of both the doer and the thing that's being done, and receiver and the thing that kind of illusory quality of all those.
Yeah, I think you said it better than I did. I think that was a good summary. To see the insubstantiality of all of the aspects of it, they're called the three parameters, or the three spheres, or the three aspects, meaning the doer, the recipient, and the thing that's done. Mm-hmm. They're all insubstantial.
Yeah.
That's a good way to look at emptiness. It's seeing things as insubstantial.
Yeah.
they still like exist. We still perceive them at the relative level, but at the ultimate level, they're not how they appeared.
So would you, can you, I mean, maybe I'm going on too long about this, but is it, could you say this is sort of a way to focus yourself, these paramitas?
So the paramitas themselves are a way to focus yourself?
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to put it too, but go on. Maybe you want to explain more what you mean.
Well, I'm thinking you go through life, but you're not necessarily paying attention to the paramitas.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of people are good people. I think we're all good people, and many people who are not Buddhist are good people, and they go around and they are generous, naturally patient, naturally live a good life, and so forth. But the benefit of the path and the way that this is expressed is exactly what you're saying. It focuses our efforts. Yeah, I want to take every possible opportunity to practice generosity. I want to take every possible opportunity to practice patience, because this is what's going to free me from my confusion so that I can help free other people from confusion, as opposed to just being a good person. I think being a good person goes a really long way, and that's what we need in the world. But being a good person who recognizes also the insubstantiality, you know, of whatever's happening around them, that's the liberation path. So you're not only choosing to practice all of the paramitas, like take every opportunity to be generous and so forth, take every opportunity to develop meditative stability, to develop your ability to sit with your mind at rest, but you're also taking every opportunity to imbue that with wisdom by recognizing the emptiness or the insubstantiality of whatever's happening. I don't know if that was helpful or not, but Lamajin's
yeah, very good. Thank you.
Add something too. Okay, you're unmuted, Lamajin-san. You're remuted. I don't know what happens, but sorry. Do you want to unmute yourself? All right, there you go.
Okay.
Now you're unmuted.
I think this also goes back to like from the 37 practices of the three levels of motivation, because Mark, you know, by saying focusing and being mindful, you're out of the thing of just finding happiness for yourself, because, you know, you're really tackling saying, I'm actually not just wanting to be reborn. I don't just want a better life now, but, and I don't just want to be in samsara, but that a better situation in samsara, but that ultimately I'm in this to benefit all beings. So that as you're doing the paramitas, when you're aware that you're actually practicing towards, you know, perfecting the paramitas, having that motivation that it's to benefit all beings, is fabulous. And I guess this is something that I used to, or I still do when I teach the Monday night classes, is the profundity. You know, there are these three levels of three aspects of practice, or three special aspects, whatever, three genuine aspects, which is that one, you do the preliminaries, which is taking refuge and developing the altruistic attitude of bodhicitta. Then the second part is whatever you're engaging in. And the third is dedicating the merit. And so I say that, you know, the profound thing is that you can take the most mundane activity, you know, brushing your teeth, crossing the street, you know, walking from one end of the, you know, supermarket aisle down to the end, other end. The point being is if you engage your mind saying, I'm going to practice the paramitas for the benefit of beings, then whatever you're doing, mm-hmm. you know, just walking from one end to the other, you've got diligence going on, you've got patience going on, you've got concentration going on. And then at the end, you're dedicating the merit towards the benefit of, it's a cause for the benefit of all beings. Then every single activity we are engaged in has some sort of aspect of the paramitas. You know, I'm doing this boring job. I don't see how I'm possibly benefiting others. Well, again, I'm applying diligence. Developing patience. I'm, you know, one pointedly, you know, doing the job. You know, all of these slowly, because you're doing it for the benefit of others, you know, ultimately to benefit, as she said, Jujun said, the benefit of oneself and be able to ultimately benefit others. So by making, you know, like focusing on the six paramitas and being aware that you're focusing, I think is involved at some level, whether it's conscious or not, of developing that greater motivation to practice. I mean, that's just what comes to mind. So it's a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah. It also, it focuses us in the sense of practice on the cushion versus daily life practice. I mean, a lot of these are daily life practices. And I can kind of see how diligence is the fulcrum, like, of the whole thing in this particular, like, way of looking at it, that generosity, ethical conduct, and patience are things we practice in our lives, like in all of our interactions with other people. Like, how can I turn this into generosity? How can I think of the other person's benefit instead of being completely focused on my benefit? How can I make the other person happy? How can I make the other person, you know, how can they benefit from this situation instead of how can I benefit? But then when we get to meditative concentration, that's a cushion practice. And of course you can apply that in daily life and you want to learn to do that, but that's a cushion practice, and developing wisdom is, like, at least initially a cushion practice. We're talking here about Shine and Laktong, Shamatha, calm abiding meditation, and insight meditation. So those start out as cushion practices, but ultimately you're going to want to apply both of them to daily life as well, to all of it. And diligence is what gets you all of it. You need diligence to conduct your daily life in accordance with what will liberate you and liberate other beings. And you need diligence in order to do the cushion practice or the chair practice that's going to turn them into paramitas, turn those actions into paramitas. So thank you, Lama Jinsang and Mark. And Marilyn has something to say. Yes, go ahead. You're unmuted, yes, we can hear you.
Well, I was just thinking about when you were sort of off the top of your head saying, well, is this chapter, should we have spent, I translated it, should we have spent a whole class on this little chapter? First of all, from a teaching perspective, repetition is really good. But then when you started to use the word, take every opportunity to practice, take every this is another chance to take every opportunity to get a basic nature of what we're going to see again and again. And so it's one of those opportunities. This chapter is, one of those opportunities, as in addition to being an introduction.
Yeah.
So it's certainly worthwhile.
Yeah.
And listen to comments that people have made,
Yeah. Well, I think Mark really brought it into focus in a good way by using the word focus. Understanding how the paramitas operate, understanding what the basic framework is, helps us focus our efforts on the path. And again, this is the action part of the path. This is what we do as much as we possibly can if we want to, A, always have a good rebirth and a good situation in samsara where we can help people. I mean, that's not like a trivial goal. That's a really excellent goal, to have everything that you need in your life to be able to continue to practice the Dharma, to be able to help beings in whatever ways you can. It becomes a transcendent practice, with the Bodhisattva motivation. But anyway, this framework, which I thought might be more academic than people would find, practically useful, but for me, it really does bring the whole thing into focus. And then we've set the stage for understanding why we're practicing the paramitas and why we practice them in this order, which I think is really interesting. Do all the generosity you can, and that will help you then practice ethical conduct. And that will then help you practice patience. You're not going to necessarily get everything at the same speed, but it gives us like a way to unfold like our activity in samsara so that it becomes the most efficient possible path to liberation. So we got a couple of minutes left. Anybody got any further comments or any questions? If not, would you like to do a couple of minutes of meditation? So that will be the fifth paramita. We'll be cultivating the fifth paramita by just doing a little bit of Shine meditation. And if you have been introduced to Laktong, Vipassana, insight meditation, then that's what you practice. Once you've got Shine, calm abiding, stabilized a bit, then it leads naturally. It sets the stage for developing insight, being able to actually look at the mind itself. So this is really important practice. So I think everybody's muted, and we will just bring our minds to rest one more time today. Letting our attention sink once again into awareness of our body, supported by our seat and supported by the floor. Letting all our senses be open, noticing visual phenomena with our eyes slightly open, noticing sounds, noticing tactile sensations, being aware of whether it's warm or cool, how we feel internally. And we can just rest like that in open awareness, or if we feel our attention needs to be tightened up a little bit, we can add something like following the breath, which takes a little bit of our attention, but gives us a way to know if we're distracted or not. So resting in just full on open awareness or following the breath. All right, so we're going to segue right into our dedication of merit, directing all benefit from this study, contemplation, and meditation to the enlightenment of ourselves and all beings, our complete liberation from suffering, confusion, and samsara, our complete awakening and ability to help others. This merit, may it win omniscience, defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddhakayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. Okay, it's 3:30 and everybody is unmuted. Thank you, everybody. Go ahead.
I just want to remind, I've been getting little things that Jongjin, Samsung, Robert Hoffman, they've been working on text to put on the website, et cetera. So to keep up with what's going to be going on in the next hour or so or shorter, check the website. There'll be something on the homepage, et cetera, to get a full information.
Okay, and I'll send it to everybody too
when we have it finalized.
Thank you, Imogen. And thanks everybody for your participation today, whether you spoke or not. I thought it was a good discussion. And we'll see you May, not the 2nd or the 9th, but the next one, the 16th, May 16th for the Paramita of Generosity. Hope to see you at KTC.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye, Dan.
Bye, everyone.